There is a lot of mistrust of the technology. And if you see, you know, there's some sensational headlines, there are always sensational headlines about technology. But it's almost like we built this giant straw man that we're like, okay, everything that's wrong with technology, let's call it AI, you know? Everything that we dislike about technology, we'll just set it up and say, well, it's AI's fault, or it's generative AI, and it's out to put us all out of work, and there won't be colleges and universities anymore because ChatGPT will just, you know, pipe knowledge into our brain or something. I don't know. There, and not to trivialize it, but I just think that there's still a lot of mistrust out there and a lot of fear and uncertainty.
Welcome to the EdTech Connect podcast, your source for exploring the cutting-edge world of educational technology. I'm your host, Jeff Dillon, and I'm excited to bring you insights and inspiration from the brightest minds and innovators shaping the future of education. We'll dive into conversations with leading experts, educators, and solution providers who are transforming the learning landscape. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss an episode. So sit back, relax, and let's dive in. Corey Reed is the person behind the purple curtain of Texas Christian University's digital presence. As director of web management since 2017, he guides a cross-functional team that designs, builds, and optimizes every public-facing experience on tcu.edu, keeping usability, accessibility, and search performance at the forefront. Before bringing his talents back to his alma mater, Corey spent 6 years at Sabre Corporation. There he managed front-end developers delivering responsive and localized web platforms for top-tier hotel and restaurant brands in more than 50 countries, honing the art of tailoring digital experiences to diverse audiences. When he isn't championing web standards on campus, you might find him tinkering with 3D printers or riding a bicycle. So it is great to have you on the show, Corey. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. I'm glad to be here.
So let's start with, you know, your background. I didn't realize, and we've talked a lot together, but you were graphic design first. Yeah, TCU. What drew you into the fold of web development?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I knew from, I guess, a seventh grade kind of research project in school that I wanted to try for graphic design. You know, it was one of those, you know, class assignments where they're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm like, I really want to do art. But everyone scares you off pursuing art because they're like, you're going to be a starving artist. I'm like, well, I don't want to starve because that sounds terrible. What commercial art's out there? So I fixed my sights on graphic design, came to TCU, studied that, made it into the program. And as we were nearing completion on the degree program, they said, okay, there's a mandatory internship in the industry before you graduate. I'm like, okay, that's great. I should probably get a real job or start interviewing for a real job and see if I can cut it as a graphic designer. So I landed a job at a small ad agency, right, where they did a combination of print and this emerging digital field. They're like, we're going to start building some websites. And you know, this is at the very beginning, really, of sort of the public phase of the internet. And so I'd been online and looking at websites, and I'm like, oh, wow, websites, you know, wonder what it takes to pull that off and to kind of marry those two things of these, you know, newspaper, billboard campaigns in with some sort of thing that you can look at on your computer. And so I remember my boss, he wheeled in this little integrated television unit right on a rolling cart that had a VCR in it. And he took a Linda training VHS tape that was on Macromedia Fireworks. And he put it in and he's like, learn how to use this application because this is how you're going to do your job. Yeah. And so, you know, I went through that, learned how to do some kind of brochureware websites, you know, did a lot of flash stuff back in the day. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that or not. But we built a lot of those. And I just found myself over the years doing more and more digital and less analog.
Yeah, it's so funny how our backgrounds are similar, Corey. I keep talking, like, we have the bike thing in common. But right. I was also in graphic design before I got into web development too. But I got to tell our listeners who heard you talk about Lynda. Lynda, if you don't know, was the old learning platform that I think LinkedIn bought them like 15 or 10 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, it was before there was a Lynda.com even. Right. It was just Lynda. And it was all, you know, based off of these videotapes. And it was, I don't know, it's kind of been a wild ride.
And it's all about timing. Like, we may have similar timelines because I remember, I don't think I've told this story yet, but I was working in graphic design for a energy distributor. I was a marketing guy, my first kind of real job out of college. And the guy's sister worked for Apple. He had all these fancy, like a computer and a scanner and this camera. This was like the early mid 90s. He had a digital camera. So I got to play around with all this stuff. And then one night at 9 p.m., he calls me to his house. My boss calls me to his house. And like, this is not good. This is weird. Like, this doesn't happen. He had discovered, I think this was 95. He discovered Yahoo. And he's like, you're not going to believe what I found. I found the federal budget. And we were just on Yahoo at his house for like hours. And I mean, right now people are thinking the federal budget, but like to get the line item of the federal budget and all these things, we were like, that's when we discovered really search and the internet. It was pretty, and I'm like, I got to figure out how to get us on this. How do we get on? So that was my job as a marketing guy to like, you know, figure out the web too. You know, it's this new thing.
It's funny what pulls you in. I think what really hooked me early on was when my high school buddy found the full transcript to Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And I was like, oh, that's what that line's saying. That's amazing.
Let's go back even further because I know you're from TCU, I guess it's forward from that, but you were in the hotel industry. Tell me about the pivot from hospitality to higher ed.
Sure. So, yeah, for 6 years, I worked for Sabre Corporation, Sabre Global, specifically the Sabre Hospitality Solutions business unit. And we were building a lot of custom web experiences, custom content management systems, and things like that for our roster of clients. And I'd always kind of kept an eye on my alma mater, you know, just would look at the job board every now and then just to see if there was something that would open up that was at all relevant to my work experience and kind of professional passion and that sort of thing. And there are so few opportunities, there's so few of my role that I was just kind of casually looking over time. And my wife actually saw the opening get posted and she's like, oh my goodness, you wouldn't believe what just happened. And I'm like, what? And she said, there's an opening for something that sounds like your job or maybe your dream job. And I was like, okay, well, let me go look at it. So it was a little bit serendipitous, you know. She saw the job posting and then I applied and went through the recruiting round. And so I got the job here and I was a little bit nervous. I knew the place, right? Because I was an undergrad student here. You know, I spent quality time on campus. I knew that the place was special, but I didn't know how much of hospitality, web development, and those skills and tactics and things would transfer over. Hmm. Like, I don't know, maybe the act of doing higher ed is going to be so different that I'm going to be a little bit of a fish out of water. And it's actually been really surprising, maybe not to everyone in the audience, but it was surprising to me in the moment, just how much does transfer over. Because, you know, Sabre had basically, they had their formal mission statement or vision statement, but they had this kind of casual elevator pitch sort of version that was better travel, better world, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole idea was if we could do the best job that we could to encourage more people to travel and to travel more often, that it builds empathy and cross-cultural understanding and just makes better global citizens out of the world's population. And that's a lot of what higher ed's about, right? Is broadening people's horizon, opening up our worldviews, building empathy and understanding and, you know, cross-cultural sensitivity and communication. So there have been a lot of really beautiful overlaps kind of in that transition. And, you know, kind of on the, you know, dollars and cents side of it, there's also some parallels in that, you know, we were trying to market these experiences for people that were a low volume in terms of transaction, high cost kind of life experiences. You know, you think about if there's a dream vacation that you would like to take, you know, I would like to go do 3 weeks in South Africa, or I'd like to go to wherever. Those could be a thing that you save up for a long time and go have this amazing, powerful experience, transformative experience. But we're not trying to sell you that every Thursday. We know that you're only going to do so many transactions. So with a college education, it's similar, right? I mean, you save for years, you try to figure out the math to get it to work. You try to find that right thing and you study and you compare your options and you decide on something. And then you go and have this transformative experience. So,
well, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you and I recently talked on a webinar with the Chronicle of Higher Education about search. And what I realized after that, and I've talked to some other schools that have similar roles and people as you in a way of saying, you know, it used to be IT over here and marketing over here. And we have to learn, like, it used to be IT was saying, hey, your new CMS is up, go to training. And it was very IT driven and marketing kind of had to come along. And we all know, like, that's not the case anymore. Marketing is really needs to drive the boat now and needs to, like, make decisions on, hey, we need a new CRM, we need a new CMS, or, you know, personalization tools or a search engine. So we're all aware of this, but you're in this position that I find unique in that it's a somewhat front-end experienced technical person in a leadership role in marketing. And I'm finding that those roles, those people, that if you can get that person, especially with so much experience, you seem to be more successful maybe than these other schools that in getting things done, the right solution quicker. Do you believe, like, the team, you know, makeup is ideal? Or what do you think about having your role in marketing rather than being in IT? And how does that help you make, you know, make decisions on technology going forward?
It's interesting. And it's something that I find myself wrestling with, you know, from time to time. So I don't know that anyone's going to feel like they're necessarily a perfect fit in the org chart. There are always going to be things where you're like, oh, if only we were aligned with IT, maybe some of these purchasing things could go faster. Or, wow, I sure am glad I'm right here on the front lines of this marketing campaign, so I have more awareness and I can better plan for appropriate technology, knowing what the marketing strategy is. Like, what are those audience types that we're trying to reach? What are the kind of marketing and recruiting headwinds that the rest of the marketing folks are wrestling with and trying to solve for? And how can I go out and go to market and find some tools that can best help all of us together? There's a couple of things. I think the real value of having our web team inside marketing is because of that, is being closer to the decision makers on strategy so we could try to align better. If you think of IT, they're trying to support everybody all across campus, lots of disparate needs and priorities and everything else. So they're going to have, a harder time to really understand the nuance of what we need and when we need to pivot because something comes our way that we didn't forecast and couldn't have possibly forecast. I'm looking at you, COVID, right? So I think that helps us be a little bit more responsive the way that we're aligned. But I could see you being a group being successful if they were in IT. They would just need to crank up the, you know, cross-campus communication. There would need to be a lot more kind of ongoing dialogue just so that they could do the same sort of work.
And I'm saying it, I've seen more success in institutions where the web team is in marketing, or at least the leader, or they have more than just one person that's a low-level person. It seems to be a great model that I think their higher ed's a little behind on. So how do you balance, like, you and I have talked about, you're kind of a leader in a lot of front-end digital experiences. How do you balance all these new solutions you have to kind of, probably someone trying to sell you something all the time with AI or things, versus, like, you might have some legacy things you just got to keep running. How do you balance the innovation, you know, time, resources versus just keeping your stuff up and going?
Carefully, you know, hopefully successfully. It is a dynamic that's always there of wanting to keep an eye on the emerging technology. I used to say to my Sabre team, I'm like, guys, let's share those things that catch our eye and come up and that we think that are pretty cool and exciting, but we can't always chase the shiny thing, you know? So regardless of which industry you're in, which vertical market you support, you can't always be adopting some new thing because there's so much loss, you know, like downtime, just because you're always learning the ins and outs of new tools and things. So I try to take a look at the project and understand what's the project priority, what's the turnaround time, what's the time to live on it, you know, how long is this project going to be out there, and do we have something that's an appropriate solution for it off the shelf today?
Yeah.
Or do we need to go to market and find something that'll do the thing that needs doing?
Do you think enough marketers, or you yourself too, are looking at conversion? Like, you get so much traffic, and maybe, you know, we're all afraid that people are getting all their information elsewhere because we have all these AI tools for search and things, and they come to your site and we're still getting traffic, but how do you balance what that user needs? And, you know, in this changing landscape of, okay, like, for example, how are you using AI and what tools are you leveraging to really optimize those users that you're still getting to your site right now?
That's really where I think AI is the most useful for us right now, is in crunching a lot of the analytic type data, you know, like, as you said, there are a lot of people calling or emailing or whatever, saying, I have this AI-enabled, you know, spoon, fork, knife combination that you should really try out. It's like, that's great, but I don't want to eat my food any faster right now. You know, I think I'm okay there. But what I really could use some help on is keeping an eye on the web analytics for general site traffic and keeping an eye on conversions and finding trends. And things like our on-site search analytics, that's something that, you know, we're using the SearchStax engine for our tool, and it's got some pretty cool AI-enhanced reporting and data crunching in it. And that's super helpful for us because we're a small team and we don't have hours to devote to every task. So if you can have something as powerful at pattern matching as AI to go do that initial crunch of the data and surface some insights, and then I can pop in, or some of my colleagues could pop in and just sort of review those insights and then make decisions on it, that actually does provide real value for us, you know, and helps you to accelerate, to do more with less, and just avoid some of the slog that I found myself trapped by when trying to just read through screen after screen of Google Analytics reports, you know.
You and I have talked about this previously and a few times about like practical AI. And, you know, I kind of ask you now too, is like, why are more schools not using generative AI in their search? I think I know why, but I want to hear your point of like, you know, everyone loves ChatGPT for some things, but why isn't higher ed just embraced like generative AI for their search?
Well, I think there's still a lot of fear and hesitation around the technology. Generative AI became super politicized or polarized. And so higher ed, I think, I don't know, there's a taboo around it for some reason that, you know, we're going to have really strange cat photos or something.
There's fear, right? A lot of it's afraid of what might happen.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a lot of mistrust of the technology. And if you see, you know, there's some sensational headlines, there are always sensational headlines about technology. But it's almost like we built this giant straw man that we're like, okay, everything that's wrong with technology, let's call it AI, you know, everything that we dislike about technology, we'll just set it up and say, well, it's AI's fault, or it's generative AI, and it's out to put us all out of work, and there won't be colleges and universities anymore because ChatGPT will just, you know, pipe knowledge into our brain or something. I don't know, there, not to trivialize it, but I just think that there's still a lot of mistrust out there and a lot of fear and uncertainty.
It makes me think about, I don't know if you remember, I think it was about 10 years ago, it kind of blends together now, where Google came out with their college pages, where if you if it knew you were looking for a college, it almost created like this college webpage for you that was all templated.
Right.
I knew there was a name for those. And it was often better information than the college website itself, right? Because it's so hard to dig through all that. Everyone's like, wow, like college websites are gone. We're not going to need them. That was a decade ago. Do you remember those templates? Like, and they're still out there, right? If you search for Stanford University or whatever, it knows you're searching for that. You'll see that in Google. People still go to your website. The thing is they're coming at a different point in their journey. They probably know a lot more about your school. So the AI part, it makes sense to me that higher ed's just, they see this shiny object, they're afraid. But I think you said once, we want to be able to connect the dots. Like AI can give us some suggestions. And I think that's what I've seen the demo. I know what you're doing. I love how you're tackling that. What else are you proud of at TCU? You're known for search. Like we talk about that all the time. Are there other things you're working on or coming up that you really, really love doing?
The thing that keeps me going is I like the idea that we're constantly making things better. You could either find the internet exhausting or inspirational. And I try to keep myself on the inspirational side of that spectrum because the bar where the customer expectation is always kind of inching its way up and the technology shifts over time. And so you're constantly having to refactor what you've done. Our team likes to talk about, you know, what your past self did for today's you, right? Like, so what did past Jeff do to set today Jeff up for success? Yeah. And so if you look at some of your old code, you're like, oh my word, why did I do that? Why did I paint myself into this corner? Or you go, you know, this isn't too bad. I'll just tweak it a little bit and make it that much better. Hey, thanks, past Corey. You did me a real solid just then. And then we think, all right, now I'm in the moment. What am I going to do to make future Jeff and future Corey happy? You know, what could I do today to start something in motion that's going to pay some dividends for us down the road? So those are the kind of things that keep me fired up, you know? So I know that I can't just fix everything. When I started here 7.5 years ago, something like that, I inherited a wild and woolly kind of web network. And you know, there were great things. And then there were some really crazy, old, outdated, sad things that needed to be remediated. And I quickly found out that there's no way in the world I can just overnight fix all of this stuff. It's going to have to be a process. So we're just excited about building and kind of maturing a design system that we can share across the campus community to help people build things, to have a more unified customer experience, all these multitude of touch points in the network. You know, we want to try to unify those and just trying to find tools that will let us kind of move faster or extend our reach and, you know, just keep refining our digital experience so that people find the digital version of the TCU experience to be as friendly and welcoming as the physical.
Yeah, it's impressive. I've spent a lot of time on it. I want to ask you about your skills to hire for. Your teams have spanned from front-end developers to designers and supervisors even. What's the hardest skill to hire for right now?
Part of it is because the sort of technological landscape is shifting really quickly, you realize that your job descriptions, when you go to market, you know, open up a requisition to fill a spot, you're like, I can't use this job description. It doesn't even make sense anymore, you know? So what do you need most? And you sort of need a Jack or Jill of all trades digitally, because you're like, I don't know that I want a particular, I'm not looking for a particular certification on my team. In the past, people have gone to recruiters and said, okay, I need someone that's like really great at SQL, or I need someone that's a super ninja with JavaScript. But I kind of just need someone that's got digital fluency, you know? Because if you imagine what you might have recruited a team member for 5 years ago, there's some baseline tech that has stayed the same. I mean, for the most part, the HTML spec has stayed the same. But JavaScript is just really maturing at a pretty impressive rate. Cascading style sheets, I feel like they're accelerating on the kind of features that get added. So even on the front end side of web development, things are just progressing at a rate that makes it a little tricky to look for a particular kind of certification or something. So I'm kind of looking more at those soft skills of, you know, how do you approach learning new things?
I think you're right on, because I've been using, I was a developer back in the day a long time ago, but it was Cold Fusion. That'll date me there. So I know, and I knew enough to manage developers, and I just didn't, wasn't my, I loved the design too, a little bit of all of it, but I'm back into development using Claude right now, like creating tools that'll help me, like calculators to estimate ROI and things like that. And it's, I mean, speeding up. I'm a little nervous that like, even like the junior level developers are going to be harder and harder to like, for them to break in. Like they have to get good at using these tools too. But you're right. I think the soft skills and a kind of a jack or Jill of all trades is probably what you need to be looking for. How do you deal with, you and I have talked about this, I know a little bit in the past, and you had, I think you had this phrase, you called it the crazy quilt of content. Like, how do you deal with the endless content sprawl on your campus with so many people publishing content? How do you do that without like endless committee meetings?
Well, again, kind of carefully, it's just it's an ongoing monitor and consult cycle, let's call it. So we have web crawlers that can report on a weekly basis, and they're looking for things like content quality. So I have tools that'll report on things like the reading level of a page, right? So use the, what, Fleisch-Kincaid model or whatever to determine the overall reading level. Scanning for typos, broken links, digital accessibility errors, that sort of thing. We use that, and then we kind of do these roadshow workshops where we try to reiterate things about digital accessibility and content quality and go talk to these stakeholders and say, hey, Department of Podcasting, right? Let's talk about what you're doing in your corner of the digital world. Let's talk about, you know, page length, and you've created a lot of pages. A lot of them look like they're very internal, but you're putting them on the public facing site instead of something that's inward facing. So let's see what we can trim down. And basically every time that we touch a site, if someone says, hey, we'd like to refresh, we always, always, always start with content strategy, which says, hey, let's take a fresh look at the content that's out there, because old, stale, irrelevant content is harmful. You know, at best, it's noise that people have to sift through to find the right answer, the relevant answer. You know, Jeff, we've talked about that. Like, yeah. How do you sift through the old stuff? And then at worst, it's wrong, and it's going to lead someone down the wrong path because, you know, that program's not aligned, it's not offered anymore, or it's, you know, realigned to a different department. And so you're pointing them to Sally instead of Wilma, and that's not helpful.
I love that you've done that. We talked about this too before about, we called it search for good, where even though it might not be in your top data of people looking for searches, it's so important that I want to make sure someone searching for assault gets the right information, or, you know, LGBTQ information or things like that. So you've kind of been a leader in that. I think I'll move into that next, probably last question here about, you know, accessibility. Where do you kind of stack that in your energy these days? Is it kind of, you know, back a few years ago when I was in higher ed, it was kind of like top of mind, like we always so hard and important to really keep that big footprint accessible. How do you do that at TCU?
It's definitely still at the top because, like a lot of technological advances, right, the level of compliance keeps increasing. You know, we're grading things against WCAG 2.1 AA, but 2.2 is out, and we're looking at that to figure out when we're going to bump that up, right, so that all of our checks are grading against that spec instead of 2.1. And so since the requirements keep getting tighter, we find ourselves devoting more energy to, you know, training and awareness and making sure that the tooling is right, that we have the correct reporting tool, the correct people are receiving the reports.
Yeah.
And then importantly, those people who receive the reports that let them know how their content's performing from an accessibility standpoint know how to remediate. So we've started conducting some kind of small group remediation efforts so that we can work with people to try to stay on top of that. Because if you take your eye off that ball and you let it degrade, it's just going to be really difficult to try to climb out of the hole.
Right. It has to be a process, not a project, right?
Right.
Like, it turns your projects to be too big. Like, that's what I would always try to say is, like, let's keep on this. But, well, Corey, I love talking to you. We could probably go on for another hour, but I'm going to wrap it up and say we are going to put links to Corey's LinkedIn and TCU website in the show notes. And it was really great having you on. Thanks, Corey.
Same, Jeff. Thanks so much.
We wrap up this episode. Remember, EdTech Connect is your trusted companion on your journey to enhance education through technology. Whether you're looking to spark student engagement, refine EdTech implementation strategies, or stay ahead of the curve in emerging technologies, EdTech Connect brings you the insights you need. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an inspiring and informative episode. And while you're there, please leave us a review. Your feedback fuels us to keep bringing you valuable content. For even more resources and connections, head over to edtechconnect.com, your hub for EdTech reviews, trends, and solutions. Until next time, thanks for tuning in.